Hi, this is Glenn Mulcahy, your host for Love What You Play, online events and podcasts. I'm really excited for our next guest is someone I connected with a few years ago. Her name is Leah Wiens, and she is a team member with the Sport for Life Society, works with community leaders across multiple sectors to deliver physical literacy and quality sport-enriched programs and services. She's also the chair for Sport for Life Cochrane. Really looking forward to our chat, Leah. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So first question I ask everybody, it's kind of like going back in time. Where did you grow up and what did you play as a kid?
I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta. So I lived in about a community where in a 3-block radius was my school and all of my friends. So we had tons of outdoor play activities. We backed onto a park. There was a pool nearby. So I had tons and tons of unstructured play, creative games outdoors. And then when I came to the age of my sport, I think my parents accidentally sort of gave me a really good sampling experience. So I was able to try gymnastics, swimming, skating, skiing, and baseball, a few team sports in there as well. And so by the time I got to high school age, I just really had this love for physical activity, and I could really see the benefit of myself on my kind of mental health as well as just overall enjoyment and how I felt about myself. So when I went to when I started working at the pool and became a fitness instructor, I really moved on into the world of fitness instruction and tried to share that passion with others as well.
Yeah. So what was the most memorable in the unstructured part of it when you were growing up?
Oh, the unstructured part is just running around in the trees behind our house and playing hide and seek and just, you know, the whole come home when the street lights come on. Just playing games and being out all day and just having a blast with the friends.
Cool. I have similar memories, but mine was all over the country because I grew up in Montreal, a bunch of whole different suburbs, Northwest Territories, Ottawa, Toronto, Vancouver, and it was all wherever I was. Probably 70% of my physical activity was the free play, pickup games and what have you. And then the organized was a big part of my growing up too, but that was my most memorable. Probably pond hockey is my favorite. Like I say that to everybody because we go out on the pond and we play for hours. And the only thing that basically took us off the pond was either we needed to go to the bathroom, we had to eat, or parents would say, come home, it's time to eat. That was pretty much the end of it. So I'm glad you had a kind of similar upbringing. So what are some of the challenges? And you're working with a lot of people in the physical literacy and the sport world that parents have today to get their kids active to begin with and keep them active.
So I think from the sports side of things, there's probably too many structured sport options, really long seasons, and that pressure for kids to specialize in one sport really young. I also think then from more of a physical activity perspective, that fit, fast, first mentality can kind of ostracize people where they may not see themselves as an athlete or their kids as athletes. And so then we've completely lost the benefit from the mental health, from the confidence building, from the social, you know, connectivity that comes from being active and all the other assets that come from that. So I think there's a lot of challenges in our society. And one of the things we've been really focusing on with Sport for Life Cochrane is how do we get physical literacy on every agenda? It's not just in the gymnasium. It's not just on the sports field. It's something that should be, you know, walking meetings. It should be something that is in the classroom. So at the home, right? And so how do we kind of create that valuing? Sorry, I shut that off. How do we create that? Okay, I'll try that again. Hang on. I'll put my do not disturb on. I thought I shut everything down. Sorry, Glenn. Okay. There you go. All right.
no worries. Okay, so you're at challenges with physical literacy.
So the goal for the work that I do is we talk about getting physical literacy on equal footing with literacy and numeracy. And in our society, generally, we all say that we value physical activity and sport, but yet it's the first thing that goes when we have time pressure. It's the first thing that goes when there's a guest speaker at school, they use the gym. And so we're not putting our money where our mouth is, so to speak, and really valuing that or living the value that we aspire to.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I was at an event, it becomes a blur, probably 2 weeks ago, and I was interacting with a phys ed teacher / coach and two grassroots coaches, and the phys ed teacher shared with me that there's no longer phys ed teachers at the elementary system in British Columbia. And I was like, what? I mean, they're all generalists, so they're all relying heavily on a lot of the stuff that and the materials, okay, resources that you're sharing through Sport for Life and Active for Life. And they're completely like struggling because they've not been in the space. And a lot of the new teachers weren't even physically active to begin with. So it's a real kind of work in progress going backwards. So I couldn't agree with you more that we got to figure out how to get everybody active. What are your biggest challenges making that happen?
Wow. That's a broad question. I think this creating that valuing, so meeting people where they're at. Like I said, everybody, I don't think anyone would argue that it's not important, but it's how do we create that time and space and energy to do that. So for example, when we're working with schools, at one school here in Cochrane, I used to literally go in for 10 minutes when all the kids were in the gym doing like a singing session, and the teachers had, I think, 30 minutes to have some prep time, and the principal said, okay, you can have 30 minutes. By the time the teachers got in the library, there was 15 minutes left, and I would show them like two quick games they could do, and little fun activities they could do to teach a skill. And over the course of about a year, year and a half of doing that, they started to get some really quick ideas, and then they would start to come and approach me and say, hey, can I have some more resources? Here's what I'm doing. So it's almost like teaching people that, you know, it doesn't have to be huge. It's just do a little bit, be a little bit more intentional, and have a bit of a plan in place to build that physical activity or that quality activity in wherever you can.
Yeah, and it's not just one point of contact. You were there better part of a school year to reinforce and reinforce and reinforce versus flying in, doing some education and then leaving, which is one of the unfortunate realities with a lot of organizations are trying to do. But I don't see that as a model that will work long-term. Agree?
No, I agree. I think that sustained approach of having ongoing communication and those little kind of drip method, I guess, of getting information out. I think also we're kind of having death by PowerPoint and death by presentation and lecture. And so, you know, to get the teachers to come, let's say teachers or coaches come for a session for 3 or 4 hours, that's great. But then they go back into their lives and they still don't have the time to build in all the things they've learned unless it's supported by their system. And unless it's, you know, provided in a way that's really easy for them to make a quick little tweak here and there to build on what they're already doing. I think the other lesson I've really learned is that there's value already there. So everyone who is an educator, everyone who's a coach, everyone who's a parent, they love their kids. They want to do right by them. And so starting with that assumption, as opposed to that deficit assumption, saying, fix phys ed, we need to make things better. No, you're already doing some really good things. Here's a few tips to make it even better or easier or more fun for you and for your kids or your athletes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that. Like when I first went down this space 5-6 years ago, I was frustrated with the attrition and the parental behavior and the coach behavior. And we see it all the time. And that hasn't really gone away. It's maybe getting a little bit better, but that whole negative approach wasn't really accomplishing anything. Where I started shifting the gears. So let's focus on, you know, the great things that great people are doing and kind of reinforce what you're doing. That's really good. And let's see how we can build on that. And that's when organizations kind of turn around, wow, okay, yeah, this is cool, instead of you coming in and tell us we're doing everything wrong. So it's no different than like telling a kid, you know, don't do this, don't do that. They're probably going to keep doing it just in spite, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it definitely that strengths-based approach has become more and more popular. And it's something that I lean on a lot more now than I used to in the past, for sure.
How much time do you actually end up working with coaches, like at the organized level versus the physical literacy side?
It's a mix. In my local community here in Cochrane, I would spend more time working with coaches. We offer a lot of presentations or information sessions or resource sharing for the local coaches, and then more providing advice. And I would say my time has been spent more so with teachers and with educators. We've had some really good success in going into the schools and just creating those relationships and providing that support. So
you're working then with coaches, teachers, the educators are all dealing with kids. So what would you say be top three characteristics of great teachers / coaches?
Top three characteristics are, I think definitely that child-centered or athlete-centered approach. So putting the needs of each individual child first. I think, I'm just going to pause for a second here because I've there we go. Okay, we'll start that one again. Okay, so my three characteristics of a, positive athlete positive teacher or positive coach would be athlete-centered, a lifelong learner, definitely that open mind to continue to be learning, and humility. So be able to admit if you've made a mistake or you've tried something and it didn't work, that's okay. You're gonna, that's a great example for your athletes or for your students to say, oh, they tried something, it didn't work, but we're gonna try it again and learn from that. So those would be my top three.
What about the coach themselves actually owning up to they made mistakes? Is that
important? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is too many, many coaches, they just go bark, get frustrated, the kids that are not doing it right, but then don't realize it's because A, how they communicated, B, how they explained it. Many of the kids may not have the skills to do it and stuff like that. So big thing that I work with a lot of coaches on is make sure that they understand what you're asking of them so they can do it. And there's nothing more frustrating when you watch a bunch of kids do a structured activity for 90% of a practice and they don't have the free play and the chaos that they should have. Can't do decision-making, can't translate that into games, right?
Yep. And I find the coaches with, or teachers with an open mind that have that lifelong learning approach, they'll be very receptive to that and to that feedback. But then the ones where there's a wall where, we already know I'm an expert in this sport and I'm going to teach it the way I teach it and the way I've always been taught, that's where I think the breakdown happens.
Yeah, when I had that event a couple of weeks ago, one of the coaches, Grassroots, when I talked about the importance of lifelong learning and continue to build their skill set, he kind of went, well, when do I find the time for that? I mean, it's already a big commitment when you are a coach. So I get that objection. And then I get the other objection, well, it's too much money. I'm spending $500 to go to a conference, every couple of years and stuff like that. And well, but you're investing in yourself. It's professional development. Look at teachers. They have to do it as a requirement, and they have to do it monthly. It seemed like almost every week my kids had a PD day, but it is important for the ongoing development, how you can help kids get better if you yourself are not getting better, right?
Well, yeah. And I see lifelong learning as more of an attitude. So when you read something like a John O'Sullivan blog, or when you see an article, or when you're talking to a teacher or a coach from another sport, are you actually seeing and hearing their perspective, or are you, sort of blinkered in how you're looking at things? So in order to be a lifelong learner, I don't think it means you have to take a million different courses and be, sitting at a desk every weekend. It's just more of that attitude of being willing to take in new information. And I read an article, it was actually one that John Kessel sent out a few weeks back, about a basketball coach who'd been coaching for years and years, and how, he used to be that hardcore, make the kids run lines, humiliation. And, one of his athletes actually quit the sport after that. And like 20 years later, he's saying, oh, I would totally do that differently. Kids are different now. And so I've changed. And I thought that was so refreshing, because we tend to want to make the kids change for us instead of us changing for the kids, like you were saying, so that there's that positive experience and lifelong learning. So I think that's what I would look for more so, is don't be afraid to change your approach based on what you're seeing, observing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's just a matter of getting them on that mindset and understanding the importance, but more and more, I got a lot of pushback 10 years ago, but in the last few years, it's really started kind of shifting the other direction, because a lot of people are getting in for the right reasons instead of, just for their own egos. It's all about the kids. So tell me a little bit, going to a deep dive, Sport for Life Society, how long you've been with Sport for Life? And I know you've worn a whole bunch of different hats.
Yeah, I have worn a few different hats. I started my initial career with, as in active living and health promotion and fitness. And then as my own kids came into the age of signing up for, you know, minor sports. That's where I really became interested and involved. So my son was 6 years old then, and he just turned 20. So that's what, 13 or 14 years I've been at it, and really just started locally here in Cochrane by trying to educate local sports organizations and teachers around long-term athlete development. It was really new at that time and nobody knew about it. And I thought, well, if they just knew this, then they would change and we would have, you know, 8-week hockey seasons and we would have all of these multi-sport sampling opportunities. And here I am 13 years later, and I don't know that we've made too much progress. I think we're getting there slowly, but sort of figuring out some different approaches to try to help meet our sport leaders and our activity leaders where they're at.
Yeah, when you mentioned the drip effect earlier, that was something that Ken Martell shared with me. He's with USA Hockey, because I asked him, because of all the clinics I've done for, you know, BC Hockey, the Hockey Canada facilitator, I've had like thousands of coaches go through my clinics. But even last season, I asked the question, how many of you are familiar with LTPD, which is the Canadian model, ADM or LTAD, physical literacy? You know, 5 hands will go up out of 40. And I'm like, wow. But if I have USA coaches in those same clinics, every single one of their hands goes up. So I asked him point blank, I said, what are you doing differently to get that message to your coaches? He says, well, A, it's part of their coaching curriculum. Like from day one, their first course is all about the ADM and age appropriate games, and making sure you're coaching relative to the age group, et cetera, et cetera. So that's important. And then they use the drip effect by getting it out to the parents, especially the younger parents with the 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds. So they actually start seeing that whole physical literacy and the whole concept right from the get-go. We've kind of been doing that, but it's been highly dependent on websites. So whether it's Sport for Life's website, Active for Life, Hockey Canada's, but the parent has to go digging for it. Like even as a coach, when I was trying to dig LTAD, LTPD, it took a while to go find all those materials. Now it's readily available, but only because it's, you know, last few years has been rolled out. So, yeah, we have some work to do, but I think it's moving. And because of you're doing it on a direct basis, are more and more people receptive to it, and are have they adapted into their programming?
It is interesting. I think hockey's a tough one in Canada because of our cultural, history with that and how important it is. So that one's, I think, probably the hardest one to really create that cultural shift within. But I do see more and more awareness of the long-term athlete development. And I just wanted to make a note right now too, that there's a new version that's just come out, and it's long-term development in sport and physical activity. So I wanted to really emphasize the fact that this is for the lifespan, and it's from cradle to grave participation. The ages are gone. It's all based on the stage that an individual is at and then moving them appropriately through their journey. So there's some great resources on the Sport for Life website around that, and a new webinar that's out. I think it meets, again, the user, I guess, the customer where they're at, and provides some more sort of tangible tips and guidelines on how to move forward. But the other thing that we've done at Sport for Life Society is we've started to use the term quality sport instead of long-term development. So people hear the word quality sport, what does that mean? Good people, good places, and good programs. So we're trying to take the language and, you know, make it not so maybe technical, or that it feels like it's really sporty, that it's more something more relatable. And we found that that's been really successful when we talk to like educators, when we talk to local sport organizations. I think the LTD language seems to resonate more at the national sport organization level, or even the provincial, but at the community level, I think we need to continue to find new and better ways to communicate that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Nick Holtz was another person I talked to for this event, and he does a lot of research, and he says, you know, in Canada, we have some of the world leaders in this space, like in terms of LTAD, physical literacy, like we are. And you look at all the great work, all the great that people have done it. The problem that we've had is disseminating that information down to the grassroots because of that time frame that it takes to get there. So that's one of his main goals, was what I try to do all the time, is take that academia and like those concepts and bring it down so they can understand it. And once they do, the light bulb goes on and go, oh, I get it.
Yeah,
I totally get it. But I think the easiest way to do it is dumbing down the language.
Absolutely.
So they can relate to it. Because most coaches that I interact with are moms and dads. Their kids 5, 6 years old. They put their hand up and they've never been in this space. They've never seen any of this stuff. So it is a little overwhelming.
Yeah, they're happy they just made it to the rink for that 6 a.m. practice, let alone sort of taking in some new information. And yeah, so the more we can, I think, make it palatable, make it bite-sized, and also creating that culture within the sport organizations and the sport clubs, if that language is there and that culture is there. And most local club websites also do have those links. But again, it's not getting down to that coach and parent level. So I think you're right, just to continue to chip away at different ways of communicating that.
I think a lot of the community organizations are doing hyperlinks, but that means that someone's got to go looking for it. And then, okay, then they got to read it. Then they got to understand it. Well, by that time, the season's over, you know? Yeah. So it's a question I've started to ask everybody, and I should have started doing this like from day one, because I'm trying to get a sense on from the leader perspectives. What's your definition of fun?
Like my personal definition?
Your definition of fun. In the sports physical literacy, like why should kids have fun being active, for example?
Well, I would start by saying it will look different for everyone. And I think if you're feeling connected to an activity and there's value in it for you, then that's fun. I think where the term fun becomes a bit polarizing is that you have parents of kids who they perceive as very competitive, and fun to them is a bit demeaning and it's not valued. But yet, if kids are having fun, they're going to stay in that sport longer and they will be more likely to succeed. So to me, it's what is it that makes it meaningful? What is it that makes them want to come back? For me at, this stage of my life, it's being outdoors, it's being, in nature, it's, finding something that, makes me feel connected and, whether socially or even taking that time just with that mental break. Whereas, 10 or 15 years ago, it would have been like a hardcore boot camp workout or a really hard bike ride or something, right? So those things sort of change, I think, over your lifespan. But the element of fun that is so crucial for everyone, again, it's not just for, bubble gum and gummy bears for everybody all the time. It's again, making it meaningful and that the kids want to come back or the athletes want to come back.
Yeah, that's a great definition. It's funny that when I've asked the question, that the gummy bears or some kind of the goofing off. But when I've asked kids, is it when they say fun, none of them say goofing off. They actually don't like their counterparts, especially in organized sports, when they goof off in practices because they get frustrated. They're not paying attention and make it harder for them to do stuff. So it's kind of like, okay, but no one's ever asked them the question. So they don't know why. What fun actually is for them. And I've done that a lot with the kids as well. So I'm always interested from the adult perspective, what their definitions are. Yeah. So physical literacy, what's your definition of physical literacy?
Physical literacy, having the skills, confidence, and motivation to be active for life. So this is something that I live and breathe every single day. And it really underpins all of the work that I do. And so it becomes a conversation about, coach will say, well, I'm already doing that. Well, we equate physical literacy with physical activity, or we create physical literacy with movement skills. But it's really about this holistic element where the mind and the body are connected as one. And so if you're active, you're going to be a better learner. If you're, your brain is healthy and you can think more clearly, then you're going to be able to use better strategies in sports. So it's really, I feel, a very holistic a model that allows everybody to see themselves in it. So as opposed to the word sport, that may not everybody may see themselves in that, but everybody fits under the physical literacy tent.
Yeah. And one of the challenges that we have in the space is the next generation of, our Canadian society, a lot of people are coming from other countries where education is a lot more important than the sport and the physical side of it. Maybe ping pong and badminton, but how do we incorporate and get those you know, new kids that are coming to the pipeline, the parents coming to the pipeline to buy into the concept. What's been some of the stuff you've been doing?
Well, first I have to tell you a really funny story, because I was in a school this morning in Northeast Calgary, and there's a lot of immigrant families there, and the teacher asked them, do you guys know what game was on last night? And there's a pause. This was like about grade 3 or 4 students. There's a pause. And then finally someone's like, hockey? Yeah. And do you know who won? And then there was some silence. And I was like, the blue guys. And then the second class was like, the Predators. I had no idea about that. So there's definitely cultural differences in it, you know, not just participation, but also like interests and things like that. But focusing on the academic impact, if that's what's important to the culture, focusing on the social impact that sport or physical activity can have is where we try to make those connections. So there's something called the human capital model that's basically a study that was done that talks about all the research on physical activity, all the benefits that come from that. And it links to people who are more active make more money, they have more friends, they have less mental health issues. They have all those physical attributes and disease prevention attributes that we talk about. So can we focus on how do we get to that point where physical activity is, again, valued equally as all of the other things we're trying to teach our young people? Because I truly believe that you to be physically active will be more of an impact as much as being able to read, but we don't value it. We don't, you know, how do we get to that point? One little guy in a said, you can't do math if you're dead. So it's just creating that urgency around it and creating enough advocacy so that we start to really prioritize that. Oh, your sound went off there, Glenn. Sorry, I can't hear you. That's weird. Oh, there.
You got me now?
Yep.
Okay, my bad, because I muted while you were talking.
Oh.
It kind of comes to this concept then of the erosion of free play in society, because we've pulled out the physical educators, we've reduced the time for recess, reduced the time for lunch hours, longer academic hours, less extracurricular. So an extracurricular is not just the physical education, art, drama. Like, oh, my kids, it was all kind of private. We had to do it after school. Yeah. Have you seen Peter Gray's TED Talk?
I haven't seen it yet. No, that is one that's on my list, though. But
yeah,
no.
It is, and I had the true privilege and honor to actually chat with him for this event.
Oh, nice.
He one of the key takeaways in that talk is kids don't need more school; they need more free play. And I was like, it totally resonated with me, because so much truth that even in the sports world, there's way too much structure. And there's not enough free play. Like, I don't think that kids should be standing in lines, you know, 14 of 16 kids standing waiting for their turn and all this other stuff. We should try to figure out to get more chaos in the early age groups so they are active, they're enjoying it, they're coming back. Same holds true with the next generation that's coming into, you know, various countries, because our growth is going to come through that. Mm-hmm. How then do we embrace the changes? And one of the things I was really excited about, cricket is a pretty big sport for South Asians. And my community, believe it or not, my community of Delta has built a cricket field. And everybody's like, oh my God, we have already have 200 kids signed up for it. They figure they're going to double, probably triple in the next 3 years. So is that something we should be looking at, is adapting our sports metrics and to what they are accustomed to in their countries?
I think it's a great place to start. Why wouldn't we? If that's something that's familiar and it's a link to physical activity, it's a link to relationship building, it's a link to making connections, then why on earth wouldn't we do that? And I think from there, those relationships can start to build into crossover into other sport or activities. So I absolutely think that that we should do that. And then as far as the risky play, as far as the unstructured play, how do we bring that back into like sports mentality? And, you know, I think a coach or a leader often thinks, oh, if parents come and see the kids skating, you know, playing in the gym, and they're not being supervised and they're not in a rigid activity, they're not doing their job. And so how do we reinforce that idea that actually more learning happens when you just sit back as a leader and let kids solve a problem or let kids be creative in sport and learn in even in the classroom, right? That sort of happens. So I think it's more and more creating more and more awareness around that, and having then that trust of the teachers or the coach to kind of let go and just see what happens.
When I was talking to John Kessel this go around, he said, it's all about the practice is looking good mm-hmm. for the parents, right? And yeah. But it should be chaotic. Like they should be running all over the place. There should be smaller area games. And like in the volleyball world, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, not constant 6-on-6 and like hockey, 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, instead of 5-on-5 all the time. And the same kind of hold true to all the other sports is bringing the chaos back and letting the kids kind of, they have to, if they're not going to learn through practices by deciding on their own, and a coach is telling them what happens when they get into games, they're robots, right? They use that whole joystick mentality. Well, they're not robots. They're pretty smart. Like these kids today, statistic I heard, they see more information in one day than in early 1900s generation would see in their entire lifetime. So if they're able to absorb that kind of information, I'm pretty sure they can make decisions on their own if we give them the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where you see this very traditional format of a coaching session where there's a lot of sitting, listening to the coach, watching the coach do the demo, the kids do and drill for a few minutes, then they come back in, they take a knee, they do a debrief. So how much time is being wasted coming in? Let them stay where they are, you know, change the drill one bit, like one, do one little modification, go again. Another thing we've been focused on quite a bit is the idea of teaching games for understanding. So more of an inquiry-based learning approach where you set up some small, like one or two rules for an activity, and then you stop every so often and ask some exploration questions that the learners are figuring out on their own without being told. And we know that that's a stickier way of learning than just giving them the answers all the time, right? And so definitely something to look up is teaching games for understanding. It's been really heavily researched in the education world, but it's something that Sport for Life is using more and more as a way to reinforce how to create that quality experience and foster creativity, foster independent thinking and problem solving in our young athletes.
Would that kind of go in the same area of intrinsic versus extrinsic learning?
So yeah, definitely.
Kids are thought processing versus being the dictatorship approach, which is old school. Yeah. Is that kind of where you're going with it? Yeah, because that's kind of really, that for me, that's the way I've always tried to coach, is get the kids to learn more than me teaching them. Because if you're teaching them, you never know if they're actually learning. So tell us a little about your great work that you're doing in Cochrane. I know you got a big event, and I was looking at it. Are you involved in it? Because it's this weekend, right?
It is this weekend.
You really squeeze us in. So yeah. Tell us about it. It's like
I have a great team around me. So this event is called All Sport One Day, and actually the city of Calgary has been running it for 10 years, and we decided in Cochrane, like, we really should do something like this as a way to bring all of our sport partners together. And we've had good relationships with them over the years, but let's celebrate and give them this opportunity. So we have 9 different sports coming out to offer sessions throughout the day on Saturday, and it's all free. So kids from the ages of 6 to 17 can sign up for up to 2 different sports or activities, and they just go out and try them out, and they can rotate around and experience some new activities, and hopefully they want to try it out and sign up. And if not, they just had a great day participating in sport.
And that's the actual sports themselves. Are they being run by the local organizations, like their coaches? So for, I remember reading it, I don't remember them all. There was archery, rugby, soccer, badminton,
orienteering.
Orienteering, that one intrigued me. Olympic wrestling, that one was like, really? Like, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So that's 6.
Dance, yoga. So we included some
yoga.
Range of activities and skills. What are we missing now? No, I'm going to forget somebody. It's actually archery tag, which is you put these little kind of marshmallow type ends on the end of the bow, and then you try to shoot at each other. So they're running around the gym doing that. Yeah, the badminton, the wrestling, the rugby, soccer. I think we got them all. Orienteering, yoga.
Yeah, because you got the dance and the yoga. Yeah. The dance is the one I was for. And it's ironic that people think dance is not physical. You know, I watched, I posted on our YouTube, there was a group, I can't remember the name, from India, and there was like 33 of them between the ages of, was it 8 and like 22? And they did this routine on America Got Talent. Blew my mind. I was like, the balance, the agility. I was like watching Cirque du Soleil from India. and you know, how can they call dance not physical? It's still in that art world. It's still classified in the art world, but I've never kind of believed that because there's so much art, athleticism now in dance. It's unreal.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we tried to do a broad range of, so we're saying sports and activities just to kind of make it a little more, I guess, inclusive and have a broader option. Not all kids want to try a competitive sport, or maybe they do one that's a more of a team sport and one that's more individual. So it's just, again, giving more options, because I think also we all, one of the greatest gifts I think we can give our children is for them to know what types of sports and activities are meaningful to them, right? Too much as adults, oh, I want to get fit, so I go to the gym and I do something that I don't really like because I think that's what I should be doing. But if we found an activity that is something we love to do, we're much more likely to do it, right?
Yeah. How many kids, is this the first year or is it the second?
Yeah, this is the first year,
So how many kids signed up for it?
So we have almost 300 kids signed up, and all the sports have opened up a few more spaces. And so we're going to have, so we may end up having closer to 350 kids coming out, which is pretty exciting for our first year.
What was the number that you were anticipating initially?
You know what? It's funny. Our initial thought was, man, we'd be lucky if we got 100 kids. So we're pretty happy. So we didn't try to get sponsors or anything. Like, oh, we have enough money to buy all the t-shirts. And now we're kind of like using some of our reserve funds, but it's worth it for the investment for this year. We'll have a great event, and then we'll be able to leverage that into some sponsorships and community partners for next year.
Yeah. I mean, if you get 300 kids, you know, maybe next year's 400 and just keeps growing every year thereafter. So the big benefit is you're exposing in one day, kids have the opportunity to try a whole bunch of different sports that they may or may not have ever tried. Archery was one I actually got to do in summer camps. I did it 3 years ago. I loved it, but there was never really an opportunity to do it out of those camps, which is kind of weird. But it's great to see them have an opportunity to try all the different sports. So is that pretty much the main focus for, or what else do you do with Sport for Life Cochrane?
So we have traditionally been more of an education and advocacy group, so offering training workshops and information. And then we've kind of evolved in the past year to do this event. So we'll probably continue this All Sport one day. We're hoping to start a community sport hub in the fall. So we've applied for some funding, and that looks like having community sports deliver 6 weeks of a sport or 4 weeks of a sport in school, 4 weeks after school, and 4 weeks in the community. So you're getting that bridge, that again, the opportunity to try a sport, but more than just one day. So you actually get a real feel for it. You can develop some skill. You can develop a knowledge of the culture of the sport, and then maybe you continue on with it. Maybe you don't, but you've gone away with some more awareness and some skills. So that's one's really exciting coming up for the fall. And then with Play Cochrane, we've initiated that over the last 2 years, and that's physical literacy and you. And it's a network of physical literacy champions. So anyone who's interested in physical activity in the community that get together 3 or 4 times a year, we share what we're doing, we share ideas, we try to see where we can collaborate and work together and create better opportunities for our kids in Cochrane.
Cool. What challenges are, what, I mean, not necessarily the word challenges, they end up using that a lot. To get all the stakeholders on board with this, what does it take to get that to happen? Because that's probably one of the biggest issues that we have with communities trying to promote, you know, being a physical literate, like a community that's physically literate, or they have a lot of kids that are active. What are you up against in terms of making that happen?
The relationship building is huge. So being able to be out there, networking, meeting people, passing on those little drip snippets of information that add value to what they're doing, I think is how the successes that we've had have come into play. So a lot of it is just from longstanding relationships. We can literally make a phone call to Vern at wrestling and say, hey, can you participate in this event? And he'll say yes, and he'll send his team out, right? So it's it's really about creating that consistency. The sports and the schools know that we're reliable source of information. We're credible. They can come to us anytime, and that we're gonna promote and align with their values of what they're trying to do. But it's not easy. Health is a big one, and I know in BC, health has really come to the table in supporting physical literacy and physical activity and invested some significant dollars there. And so that's something we want to focus on a little bit more in Alberta, is getting that health sector to the table, because obviously there's huge benefits to that for our population. And then this, you know, the recreation sector as well is always at the table and in a different way as far as supporting those learn to opportunities in the community.
What about access to facilities? There's an organization, I only became aware of them earlier this year, called More Sports in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And they have about 13 hubs. They call them hubs, but it's local schools and or the recreation centers. And they use those. They haven't branched out across Canada. It's a great model. It's community-based. And they work with Parks and Rec. They work with school board, health, and including even the fire departments and police departments. It's a full community model, getting them all on board to support kids to be active. So is that kind of the direction you're heading in?
Yeah, absolutely. The community sport hub that was going to take place in Cochrane is actually happening in the city of Calgary in exactly that same model. So they're looking at creating a network. So every school in Northeast Calgary was participating this year. So they've got this good, like, starting point, and now we can build in the health and the mental health professionals and the other community leaders to continue to support it, which I think is so important.
And is it a cost-effective model, or is it like a for-profit model? Because that's one of the things that pushes these kids out of activity, is they can't afford it.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely meant to be like cost-effective in that there's no cost to the participant. Figuring out a sustainable way to fund that will be our challenge for next year, but we can go so far on our current dollars as well as some additional grant funding. And then our hope is that it'll be such a success that local community partners and funders will come to the table, and we can put everybody has a little bit of investment in that, from the schools to the town to, you know, the healthcare, all across the board would be the ideal way to fund that. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, it's a matter of getting the back end support, because it's one of the biggest challenges I have is, you know, everybody says, oh, you're doing great work. Yeah, well, you know, I've got to make it sustainable. I've got to be able to and I golfed, ironically, I was on holidays in Hawaii. I finally took some Hawaii holidays like in May, and I golfed with a guy from the Rotary Club, and he owned a foundation. So you got to keep doing this. I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, but funding is always the biggest challenge, because you've got to pay for the facilities, you got to pay for the insurance, equipment, t-shirts, all this kind of stuff. It's all out of pocket costs that you got to cover, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So the Cochrane model, and then the two things, what are you doing with the Indigenous community?
Are you kind of froze up there? Can you ask that one more time?
Yeah, one of your hats is you're working with the Indigenous community for quality sport and working with their schools. So what are you doing there?
So the project is actually in 8 schools across 4 provinces, and it's called Traditional Games and Physical Literacy Mentorship. So the idea is to use physical literacy as a vehicle for student engagement, building resiliency, building confidence, motivation to come to school, and making sure that the teachers in the school, the administration, and the local community partners are all working together and have the training and support to be able to provide that enriched physical literacy experience.
Cool. And how is that? Is it growing? Are there more and more kids getting involved in it?
Yes. So this is very specific project funding. So we have the 8 schools this year, and then we're looking to continue to expand into other schools for next year. Absolutely. So it's one of those, we're kind of seeking out schools that are interested, and then we will work with them to either find funding or provide funding if we have it as well. So yeah. It's very, very interesting. And one of the things that I see, particularly in one of the communities that I've been working in Northern Ontario, the amount of tragedy and the amount of crisis that the community deals with completely shuts things down, like on a weekly basis. So, you know, you get two steps forward in a physical literacy initiative. And then, you know, when there's a death in a community, that is, you know, no longer obviously a priority. So, you know, sadly that happens and then you lose all the momentum and then you're kind of continuing to start over and over again. So how do we get to that point where, you know, there's a point of physical literacy actually preventing, being, having a role in preventing some of those things from happening in the first place, you know? And I know that maybe that's a bit pie in the sky, but there's definitely value, and you hear the stories of sport helping people, you know, survive, helping people thrive in their lives and healing, right? So again, it's how do we value that and how the communities continue to invest in that and support it.
Yeah, there was a an article I shared out last year. It wasn't an Indigenous community, but it was a very small town in the U.S. that had the highest per capita opioid addiction anywhere, like per capita across the country. And there was more kids dying there because of it, and then even parents. So there was a guy that actually came back to his old school, and he decided, you know what, I'm going to change this. And he decided to revamp their football program. And a lot of kids now are kind of getting off the addictions. And even some of them were going on to graduate, not from high school, but also go into college. So it can be done if you kind of create the model. It's just a matter of, it is. And when you go two steps backwards all the time, it must be frustrating.
Yeah. Have you seen the Grizzlies movie?
No, but it's on my list. Kind of like, you know, there's only so much you can do in a day. Like right now I'm trying to finish off Range before John Kessel. He's probably already got it, because in our talk, he's like waving it up here and I just got it the next day and I'm halfway through it. So, but it was Greater Edmonton Lacrosse. I did a few talks for them. They shared that to me before it even was shared out the mass. I heard it's really good.
It's very good. And we actually, interestingly, have another project in Nunavut, and the shots of that community was like strikingly similar to the community that I had been in, and it's very accurate. Like it was kind of eerie as to how well done it was and the realities of what the people in those communities are living with and working through. So yeah,
I think it's something I can probably be able to relate to from my childhood, because one of my stops moving all over the world, Canada, because my dad's job was Frobisher Bay, which Baffin Island, now they've changed names.
Yeah.
And I didn't know at the time, you know, I was 7 or 8 years old, but it was the perfect, it was the epitome of white man's burden. Like the Canadian government decided they were going to make sure they had schools and they had, you know, a hospital and they had everything. So they made a school in the shape of an igloo. The hospital was there, but they were also on their social, their own welfare system. Every kid that I went to school with had no teeth because they ate so much candy. All of the parents were alcoholics because they were on welfare. And I was like, this is just wrong. Like it was wrong. And thankfully they've now become self-governed and they turned the corner. So I can kind of relate to the sadness in those communities that if they're not, the pride is there. It's just that sometimes they go in a different direction, but seeing it come around full circle, that would be amazing to see it happen.
Well, and the other thing is increasing access to internet. And is that actually a good thing? I don't know. Because we talk about screen time and we talk about then, you know, you're living in a remote community, so you don't have access to all the things you're seeing on the internet. And how does that change your perception, I guess, of yourself and how do you, cope and what you aspire to, I suppose, right? So that's an interesting one as well.
Yeah, the whole 7.5 hours a day is, we all face that in the space. And how do we get kids to replace a few of those hours with being active? You've got to make those activities more fun than being hooked to Fortnite, right? It's an addictive nature of it. So some rapid fire questions. Do you have a book that you would recommend for coaches?
It's funny that you said Range, because I actually haven't read it yet, but I heard John O'Sullivan's podcast with the author. And so with David Epstein, I was enthralled. I just wanted to write everything down and listen to it over and over again. And I think every coach and every parent should read that. And I haven't even read it yet. So
I'm halfway through it. John sent me a note about 2 months ago. This has to be on a must read list. I went, okay. And then I totally forgot that it was coming out in May. And John Kessel shows me all the books that he recommended. And he pulled it up and he's kind of like, look, I got it. And I'm like, okay. So it was on my list. What I highly recommend is not just read the book, but See if you can track down the video that Malcolm Gladwell interview did with David about a month ago. I think it was for, I'll dig the link and I'll send it to you. But it's quite funny because they talk about the book, and Malcolm Gladwell right near the end, he goes, you know what? You've been at me for 5 years and the whole 10,000 hour thing, everybody's been coming at me. I was wrong. Like, he admitted he was wrong. And it was like, oh, thank God, sports specialization. Like, it's the biggest thing we're all fighting. And now the book's out. So it's and right in his book, I could go grab it. He goes, I loved it. And something to the effect that his testimony was, Dave is the only person that could actually convince me that I was wrong without actually something to run. And it was quite funny. So it's one testimonial. Yeah. So yeah, cool. Definitely I recommend that. What about resources or books, a book for parents?
I think the Active for Life website is a really good one as far as an online resource. I think Range would also be really good for parents. And there's Last Child in the Woods. About free play, risky play, importance of being outside.
Sounds like a good one. You familiar with Lenore Skenazy? Heard her name?
Yeah.
You ever heard of the concept free range kids?
Yes.
Okay, so she's the one that's been driving that for years. She's the one that had the 9-year-old that she let go on the subway, and everybody went ballistic and blah, blah, blah. And so she started up free range kids. Well, she's now one of the co-founders of another program with Peter Gray called Let Grow, which is coming out and it started really gaining momentum. And Peter shared with me in Utah, it's the first state, and it always takes the first, you know, the first nut and then the first follower, or the lone nut and the first follower. Yeah. Utah has passed a free range law so that kids can walk to school on their own. And it's like, okay, that's where they're losing their 2,000 steps, which kind of led to that, this whole path that we're all creating, that we're coming up with a concept of physical learning while they're not walking to school anymore.
Yeah.
So that's a resource I'm recommending to everybody. Hey, you got to check this out, because the free play and the lack of free play is something that's missing. And another person I had, I was really humbled, was Mariana Brissoni at UBC. She's infamous for the creation. She helps design the playgrounds, the adventure playgrounds, so that kids can go and play like they are in a dump, but it's kind of safe, you know, like instead of what we used to go and play in a dump. So all these people are all coming to the forefront and saying, hey, without this, you don't really develop. And even the high level coaches are saying the best players in the world, that's where they all started. Like the first question I ask is, what did you do when you were growing up? Unstructured play. You know, all that unstructured free play where we took a lot of risk and there was no parents or coaches or officials there. But now it's like you can't get away from that, right? So last question, what can coaches or teachers do to shave 5 years off their learning curves? Or should they?
Look around, sort of look outside themselves and get perspectives from other sports, from other sectors, from sort of diversify your learning and be open to learn from others, and also learn from people who've been through it. So you asked me specifically about coaches and teachers, but also from parents, where we get, I guess, pressured to go down this pathway of specialization. Our kids are going to get left behind. But if you talk to the parents, the grandparents of kids, parents who pressured their kids to that, would they do the same thing? What were their learnings? How was their perspective a little bit off maybe in those years? And what would they do differently? So I think the biggest thing that I would say is that, yeah, we all need to have a broader perspective and use the learnings from others around us. We get so emotional when it's our own kids or when it's our own sport and our own team. And so to be able to take that step back and look at things more objectively, I think will go a long way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's about that mentorship approach. But a couple of people ask that question, says, but why should they shave their learning curve? It's all about that journey and learning through our mistakes. And the reason I'm hoping to help them shave some time is to avoid some of the mistakes we all made. Like when I first started coaching, everybody I know, when they first started coaching, we all kind of look back and go, man, I wish I wouldn't have done it this way. I wish I would have done it this way. The things I said sometimes weren't the right things, but that side of the coin, it is. It's a huge learning curve. It takes a long time, but 20 years in, 25 years in, it's hard to believe. I'm still learning and looking back, man, I'm really so trying to help people get there sooner, but without losing that, the benefits of the learning, I guess, for lack of a better word. So how do people?
It's generational.
Sorry.
It's a generational thing. I was going to say, like I said, my son was six and I was convinced that, you know, this was going to change the sports system. And you know, we've kind of lost a generation and now we're putting physical literacy and long-term development back into coaching curriculum and back into education and back into even parenting, you know, but I fully agree. I think that we've got to create urgency around this. We have to, because otherwise it's not going to change. And we talk about we're killing our kids slowly, right? Nobody's going to die tomorrow from not being active, but they're going to have a less quality of life. They're not going to be as successful. You know, overall, we're really harming our society by not making this a priority. So I love that question that you asked.
Yeah, and it's funny. I've done a lot of stuff with UBC the last couple of years, and ironically, tonight I'm going back there. Robert Bush, who was the dean of the kinesiology program, shared some pretty scary statistics about the cost of the medical system based on current trends if we don't move the needle and we get back to more active lifestyles. It's going to double and triple. Another statistic that I shared with him that I saw, if currently 33% of kids in Canada are, you know, on the fat or obese side, but if trends continue the way they are, if nothing changes, by 2040, it'll be 70%. Like, that's just staggering. So we do have a lot of work to do. And sadly, I went down this space because of what my kids went through the system, the youth sports system that has evolved and is still doesn't really show many signs of changing, but I can't change it for them. They've now both aged out of youth sports, but my hope is that I change it for, hopefully I have grandkids with one or both of them. It's gonna take a generation to bring it back to this generation.
Yeah, exactly. One by one, it's that starfish, right? If you help that one starfish get back into the water, one by one, we'll get there. So
yeah, we'll get there. So thank you very much for doing this. It was great. I really enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
So the takeaways, now it has to go to edit. The actual live, we call it a live event, goes July 15th. Why middle of summer is beyond me, but last summer we did the exact same time frame and we had several hundred people sign up for it. And a lot of people said, hey, it was awesome. I did it again in December, but a week before Christmas, very few people signed up for it because I wonder why. I'm like, okay, that was so... What I'm going to do is carry over those 15 and then 15 new. So that'll be 30 different people that people can choose for over the course of the week that can listen to. So some of the ones you'd probably really be intrigued with. Like this, for me, it's been like a huge learning curve because I'm learning from all these amazing people all sharing great nuggets. And the funny story before you hang, I know you got to go. John Kessel.
Yeah.
Remember when we tried to set up the mastermind like 3 years ago? So I finally connect with him and say, you know, Kess, would you do this for me? He goes, oh, I'm humbled. You asked me. And I'm like, he's humbled. Anyway, so we get on the thing and he's sitting there and his office is like three doors down from Ken Martell's USA Hockey. And they're pretty small, maybe 12 by 12, 15 by 15, but based on. And so one wall is all bookcases, all the books he's read. Okay. So there's like, I don't know, 500 books in his office. And then comes around his whole bunch of stuff and there's some prints. So I'm saying, man, you got so many books. So he picks up his laptop. He says, oh, you got to see my office. So he literally walks around his office. So shows me all the books and then comes around and, you know, then he shows me the lanyards of all and all the passes from all the events he's gone to for like, what, 40 years? It's like this wall. And then he shows me all these kind of neat keepsakes he's accumulated from these different kids and people have given him things. And he goes, yeah, and I even got this. Look, and he's got a piece of a meteorite that one of the towns had given him in South Africa or South America. And I'm just like, that alone was like
meteorite. What the
like
heck?
A meteorite. He's got a little piece of a meteorite sitting in his office. And I'm like, and then on his desk, he starts pulling up all the books he's going to recommend because I gave him the list of questions. So here's this one. And then I joked, and then he pulls out Range, and he's like a giddy old school kid. He goes, na-na-na-na-na. I'm like, you got to
come on.
like I'm rubbing it in my face. But yeah, so that's what's been so, it is. I try to make it fun for everybody because it's, we're all so busy and trying to fit this in and get that knowledge out there. I'm finding that people are more, especially the grassroots, like a lot of the hockey coaches, they love watching this because they're like, man, I don't want to see another PowerPoint presentation.
Right. I totally agree. Yeah.
I just want to hear people tell me some nuggets. And if we get one or two things out of something like this, it's great. So,
well, I know I was like, I don't know why he asked me, like everybody on there's written a book or done something. And I'm like, well, whatever. Thank you very much for the
opportunity. No. You know why? Because, I'll tell you a couple other groups. I invited more sports. I don't know if I'm going to be able to actually have them on because they just did their soccer jam.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of give you an idea. Like when I looked at, oh, my God, she's got the 15. So I went to it on Saturday, and it's amazing. They have 1,000 kids that come to this soccer jam, 3 different age groups. So they start out with the K-1s, so that's 5-6-year-olds. And then the 2-4s grades come out, and then the 5-7s. And there's no officials. There's no scorekeepers, no timekeepers. The leaders basically keep the ball in play. But what was amazing is they basically have access to 2 outdoor fields right downtown Vancouver, like 5-minute drive from Rogers Arena. Okay. Like amazing facility. And they make them into 16 mini fields. 16 games were going on at the same time.
Amazing.
I'm like, oh my God. And guess what? The parents are all lined up along the sidelines. Taking pictures. There's no words coming out of their mouths. I'm just like, am I in a place that's real? Because all the hockey, all the sports I've been involved with, it was amazing. And I don't know if they, I think they charge a small fee, but only to the kids, the families that can afford it. But a lot of the kids that are in this program, because they're in Eastern Vancouver, are like $20,000 poverty line. They have 2 or 3 kids, so they're just doing great things. And what kind of what you're doing with Cochrane, like I wanted to highlight the good stuff. That's kind of the direction I've gone with this, is like last year we talked a lot about the negativity, the issues. Kind of like I don't want to talk about it anymore. They are slowly but surely going away, but only because of great stuff that people like yourself are doing. So highlight the great stuff, and hopefully enough people, you get farther with honey than you do with vinegar, right?
I totally agree. Yeah. Make it a place people want to be and connect to, right? Yeah.
So there you go.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.